Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
All right, that is over and done. The 2019 season is in the books. I stayed up late last night to watch. I don't know many of you probably did the same thing. I read a story the other day about how much like lost productivity there is in America on the morning after these like late night sporting events. And really the Super Bowl, I guess, kind of includes in this too, even though it's not really the latest start of all and not the latest conclusion. But sometimes that morning after a big night of watching sports on TV can feel a little slow the next morning. So if you're just kind of getting going here, we're glad to have you with us, and we'll try to put some pep in your step by saying I think today kind of officially begins that march towards the 2020 season. I love that about college football, the fact that we just move from one season to the next so quickly, and the hot takes kind of start right away, and everybody just kind of dives into it. And for Georgia fans, that's especially important because for the last couple of years, Georgia has ended the season on a note different than they would like for it to end. And there's always that moment in which everybody has that same record and everybody can sort of look towards the hope of the upcoming year, George included on that. So that's what we're going to spend a few minutes on the top of this, off the top of this program. And we're going to talk about how Georgia can prove wrong what is kind of a growing collection of doubters. I'm actually going to use a piece that Connor Riley wrote at DogNation.com because there was one way too early top 25 in particular that got my attention. Connor kind of chronicled a few more of these. We're going to talk to him about this later on in the show. The one that got my attention was the one from Brett McMurphy, longtime college football writer. And, you know, this week is always that week where a lot of these things kind of debut where people start weighing in of, hey, the last national champion was just crowned. Here's who I think the next national champion is going to be. And here's how I think all this is going to play out. Those are those way too early top 25s. Can you believe this for a moment? Brett McMurphy, respected college football writer, didn't even have Georgia in his top 10 for the 2020 season. Only had Georgia at number 13. Now, he is the outlier here. As Connor did a pretty good job of chronicling DogNation.com, you had like 24/7 Sports and ESPN that had Georgia, I think, 6th. You had Athlon, we talked about this on the show yesterday, that had Georgia at 8th. So for the most part, there are top 10s out there for Georgia, although lower than dog fans wanted to be. But Brett McMurphy from the Stadium Outfit, that's a new, I guess, online resource for college football fans, had Georgia all the way down at 13. So if you're a UGA fan and you love the idea of whatever the opposite of rat poison is, the idea of getting a chance to prove some doubters wrong this upcoming season, then I think the 2020 calendar year is going to provide you a lot of fun because you get to see how Georgia goes to work on trying to do just that. Now, there is some good news here. Based on the way this LSU-Clemson game played out last night, statistically speaking, I guess Georgia finishes the year as the nation's top scoring defense in terms of points per game allowed for the full season. And Georgia brings a lot of that talent back for this 2020 year. So from that standpoint, if you're looking for a way for Georgia to prove that they are better than the number 6 team in the country, which a couple outlets think that will be, or better than the number 8 team in the country, which I guess Athlon Sports thinks it will be, or better than the number 13 team in the country, which Brett McMurphy, the longtime college football writer, thinks the Dogs will be, the fact that Georgia brings so many pieces back from a defense that was statistically as good as Georgia's was here in the 2019 season, then that's obviously a step in that direction. But ultimately, though, I think the task for Georgia being better than the experts think, being back in the college football playoff, and potentially even where LSU and Clemson got to be last night, I think deep down we all know that the real answer to that question, does Georgia exceed expectations for this upcoming year, it's not about defense, because one way or another we sort of know the defense is going to be fine. It is about what Georgia does offensively. Does Georgia take that next step? Does it weather the storm of having lost Jake Fromm? Does it weather the storm of having lost DeAndre Swift? And in some form or fashion, does it reimagine the Georgia offense, I guess, maybe the right way to say that? Does it rebuild the pieces here to make it be something that fits in a little more with what we saw last night, with what Clemson's done offensively for the season? Even if you can't be as explosive as LSU has been, can you create something that at least looks like it belongs in the same field with the dynamic LSU offense? That's a big part of what the Georgia story is going to be as it tries to prove some of its doubters wrong here during 2020. Now, with that in mind, I thought it was kind of interesting. Nick Saban, the obviously, as you know, Alabama football coach, was working at ESPN last night as an analyst. I'm going to have more thoughts on this later on the show because I think there's actually a pretty interesting takeaway from Saban Saban's appearance on ESPN all the way around. But there was one moment when he was talking about, you know, his life growing up in football and what you see with these big explosive offenses, LSU included. And he talks about the thought process that you go through when you maybe see the need to change. Now, in Saban's case, that probably took place for him in 2014 when he brought in Lane Kiffin, and Kiffin worked as offensive coordinator for 3 years. And it's Brian Daboll after that. It's Steve Sarkisian, you know, kind of after that with Mike Loxley kind of mixed in. That's the metamorphosis that Nick Saban went through. But I was looking at some you know, Georgia fans online kind of chatting about this, and there was a sense in what Saban said last night that either could be used to apply to the situation at Georgia, or some Georgia fans thought might outright be a jab at Kirby Smart's stubborn reluctance to embrace what modern college football seems to be about. No matter where you kind of fall on that, what Saban said last night about his own process is at least relevant for Georgia, whether Saban had UGA on his mind or not. Here is Nick Saban from ESPN last night.
When you're a defensive-minded coach and you've grown up running the ball, being conservative, playing good defense and winning games, and the game changed. When RPOs came and everybody spread it out, the game changed. And if you don't join that crowd, you're never going to be able to make enough explosive plays.
So listen, I think there's an element of Georgia fans who would say what Nick Saban said there ought to be applied to Georgia. And whether Saban meant UGA when he said that or not, probably thinking about something different, but it certainly could certainly be relevant for UGA's situation. And I think there's an element of Georgia fans who hope that maybe that Kirby Smart is going through a similar process. No one, I don't think anyway, expects Georgia to have some drastic evolution over the course of one season, and it snaps its fingers and suddenly becomes a Joe Brady-style offense the way that Joe Burrow was lighting people on fire all year long. I don't think people expect that kind of drastic change from Georgia. But in terms of small steps in that direction, slight changes to be something a little bit more dynamic than what Georgia was this past year, where it just did not have enough explosive plays, whether it's running plays, passing plays, whatever else, I think some Georgia fans are hoping that some of what Saban says there about his own process can be applied to Georgia, and that Kirby Smart will go through a similar thought process over the course of this offseason. Because one way or another, why is Georgia only number 6 and so-and-so's way too early top 25? Why is Georgia only number 8 in Athlon Sports way too early top 25, or only number 13 in Brett McMurphy's way too early top 25? I think the one narrative thread that probably runs through all of those is that there are just some legitimate doubters of the Georgia offense. And even some Georgia fans would say that doubt comes with good reason based on what Georgia did not do in 2019 and what Georgia did not do for parts of 2018. So if you want to see Georgia prove doubters wrong this upcoming season, seeing a better version of the Georgia offense, a more creative version of that Georgia offense, using Jamie Newman well, using kind of a newer crop of Georgia running backs, at least in terms of expanded roles, getting the most out of Dominic Blaylock when he returns back from injury, continuing to watch the development of George Pickens, that's the way you prove these doubters wrong. Now, let me kind of finish on a high note here for a moment, because I think there's one thing that's really interesting about a lot of these early predictions that are coming out of Georgia either near the bottom of the top 10 or outside someone's top 10 in terms of the early look at the top 25 for next season. There is really nothing risked by giving those opinions whatsoever. You rank Florida ahead of Georgia right now, which a lot of these top 25s have done. You really risk nothing from that, because for the most part, once these things are published on the internet, they kind of disappear from the consciousness the moment, you know, a new piece of information comes in. However, there are some opinion makers out there who do have to put their money where their mouth is. There are some people out there who do risk something if they are wrong. And for the most part, they've expressed a slightly different opinion about UGA next season. I also saw where, like, say, in Las Vegas, for instance, there are some early odds to win the national championship for next year. And Georgia, on that list that I saw, I believe it was Caesars Palace who had this out, Georgia is 10-1 right now to win the national title. Those are pretty low odds, all things being equal. Better odds, for instance, than Florida, who is just 12-1, Auburn, who is just 15-1. So the way too early top 25 folks who have really nothing to risk by sharing whatever hot take opinion they want to express, they may tell you they think that Florida and some other SEC teams may have closed the gap on Georgia. But for the folks who still have to attach a price tag on their expertise, who still have to put their money where their mouth is when it comes to an opinion, they still see that gap between Georgia and the rest of the SEC. And for what it's worth, I guess here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia, we probably still see that gap too. We still see Georgia as the top of the SEC East for the upcoming year, and still near the very top of the entire league, and still very much a playoff contender. But in terms of answering the doubters that are out there, in terms of vanquishing the critics that do exist, what happens on the offensive side of the ball is where all the action is going to be. And can Georgia make that slight evolution towards something that fits in a little bit better with the modern game? If it can, all those folks who thought that Georgia wasn't a national championship contender at the start of this calendar year, going on right now in the beginning of January, they may be proven very wrong by the time the season takes place. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. As I said before, it's brought to you today by Engineered Solutions of Georgia, and it's available to you on a ton of platforms, video, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, every day live at 10, radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Rev, and as a podcast, wherever you find them, including the world-famous DogNation.com. Just really glad to have you as part of our program here today, and as I said before, thankful for Engineered Solutions of Georgia for making all possible. You know, a few things you may be dealing with around your house are very, very serious. You see a crack in your foundation. You see a wet basement, damp crawl space. With all the rain we've been having, basement issues become a big deal. And if it is a big deal, I know the thing that you're wanting is to find someone who can help you do it and help you fix it. And that means fast. And that's what Engineered Solutions of Georgia can provide. They are a solutions-based company. And one of the ways they provide those solutions with our very smart people who work there. They have two full-time engineers on staff. That's why we would say you can trust them. They also offer a fully transferable triple protection warranty on materials, installation, and design. And they could not be easier for you to get in touch with. You can reach out to them right now. Simply dial 678-ESOG now. That's right. Call 678-ESOG now, and that'll get you in touch with Engineered Solutions of Georgia. We have a really fun guest coming up on our program today. Connor Riley, who you read a lot at DogNation.com, has been putting a lot of great content out. I thought it might be appropriate for us to spend some more time with him during the regular portion of our broadcast here and just kind of get some thoughts from him on some of the stuff that he's been writing about at DogNation.com and kind of where he thinks this program is heading as the Dogs prepare for 2020. And now we can sort of fully turn our attention to the upcoming season. So we'll do that with Connor Riley as a special guest here coming up in just a couple of minutes. Before that, I want to go around the doghouse. And, you know, this is going to come across like a homer take, and I'm fine with that. But I was a little disappointed. Actually, I was more than a little disappointed. I was very surprised and, frankly, angry last night when the greatest college football players of all time were announced. This is the 150th anniversary of the sport of college football, and they've been sort of ranking these throughout the year. The final top 12 were announced last night. I was very disappointed to see Herschel Walker only at number 2 on this list. Jim Brown, the former Syracuse running back, coming in as the number one college football player of all time, at least based on the list last night. And when I kind of expressed my thoughts on Twitter on this, I was seeing some responses coming back, and I was actually pretty impressed with Georgia fans on this, and frankly thankful that my opinion lined up so closely with theirs. I think there was a general thought of, I mean, listen, I consider myself sort of a student of sports. I kind of try to follow the history of these various games. I've certainly heard Jim Brown mentioned as potentially the greatest NFL player many times. That's a name that I'm very used to hearing as, you know, top pro football player of all time. I'm sure around the Super Bowl they'll do something, you know, to honor the fact that we're 100 years worth of NFL football this year as well, both these brands of football celebrating anniversaries this year. I could absolutely see Jim Brown near the top of that list, and I probably wouldn't bat an eye. But when I have thought in the past about greatest players of all time, that sort of Mount Rushmore of great college football players, Jim Brown has never shown up in my memory banks on that. I mean, to my knowledge, and I think I read this last night, I don't even think he ever had a 1,000-yard season there at Syracuse. Different era of the sport, numbers would have been different. I totally get all of that. But had Brown not even been in the top 10, I don't even think I would have thought that he was snubbed. I don't think that I would have thought he was erroneously omitted from that. He's a good player and obviously an all-time great NFL player, but I just don't really think about him as a great NFL player. I thought that Herschel, who I've seen on these lists over and over again, we've already seen plenty of publications who've ranked him as their number one player of all time, once again in honor of the 150th anniversary. I thought that Herschel was snubbed last night. I mean, listen, to be able to say out of all the players who've ever played college football that you're number two, the greatest that's ever played, that's certainly no small feat in and of itself. We thought Herschel deserved number one status on this, but it's still a great time to honor his career, and it's still a great time to look back on what he meant to UGA. Our buddy Mike Griffith got a chance to do that this week. You can read a story with Mike and Herschel at DogNation.com. You can also go to the Dog Nation YouTube page and see an interview that Mike was able to do with Herschel Walker. And one of the things that came up is one of the moments that for Walker that's remembered more than anything else was back during his freshman season, at the end of that season, in the same stadium where the national championship game was played last night against Notre Dame in the Sugar Bowl, Herschel had to play with a separated shoulder. An amazing show of courage and, frankly, an unthinkable show of strength helped propel Georgia to a national championship. And when Walker met with Mike Griffith this week, he talked about why it was important for him to battle through that injury, be back on the field, and what the symbolism of all that's really about. So he should have been number one. He is number one in our book. But for a reminder of just how great Herschel is, here's a pretty cool quote from Herschel from this week.
I remember the pain, but you know, that was my very first big game. And I tell people all the time that there's more than just a game sometimes, some people. And this has always been more than a game to me. You know, I'm from a small little town in South Georgia. A lot of young kids have watched me, and I got to be an inspiration to them and let them know that during tough times, it makes tough people. That you don't give up, you get up. And that's what I try to tell people all the time, and that's what I've done all my life.
I was lucky enough to get a chance to interview Herschel myself back in July, and it's really pretty remarkable how engaging he is in an interview situation. And when you watch the video he did with Mike, you see this. Herschel gives you a lot of eye contact, and there's a lot of body language that lets you know in that moment you're the center of the room, that Herschel's giving his full attention to you. It's obviously probably one of the reasons why Walker has been successful in business after his football career has been done, because in these moments, he is totally engaged. What's that phrase that Kirby Smart likes to use about being where your feet are? Walker seems to be really good at being where his feet are. He seems to be really good at focusing in on the moment. And telling that story there is one of the reasons why I think it's important that we continue to honor all-time greats like Walker, and admittedly, all-time greats with other programs there as well. Their stories are a part of college football history. It's just a natural fact that over the course of time, some of those moments and memories can be lost. We get focused and fixated on what's new and what's happening now. We forget how special previous generations were. I hope that Walker's never forgotten by anyone, even as those who were young enough at the time to remember watching him play as they get older. I hope these Walker stories continue to be told. I'm glad to know that Walker himself is able to help tell them, because he is an all-time great no matter where you rank him on that list. We think it should have been number one, but an all-time great no matter how you slice it. Good to see him on TV last night. Great this week on the Dog Nation video channels to be able to watch him tell some of his stories about how that career unfolded. And for those of you lucky enough to have lived through it, who have been part of those games, traveling and watching the Dogs back in New Orleans, other places, I know those are memories that you won't soon forget. It's Dog Nation Daily. It's presented today by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. There was big news involving the Dogs yesterday. A graduate transfer tight end, Trey McKitty from Florida State, is now in the fold. We will do a lot on that before we're done. But for now, for more on kind of where Georgia is as the 2020 season gets ready to begin, let's welcome in Connor Riley right now.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
You know, I love reading his work at DogNation.com. He's doing an amazing job. And I think this morning, I sort of cited this off the top of the show here. It's an example of one of the things that Connor does really well. Kind of a nice survey of what is out there on the internet, what people are saying about UGA, and no better time to do that as we start the 2020 year sort of officially with the national championship game coming to an end. So we'll do some of that with Connor Riley here off the top. Welcome back to a Dog Nation Daily, and we appreciate you being here. One of the few guests that we ever have on the show that's actually in the room when we do the discussion. So, Connor, it's good to have you as a part of the program.
Yeah, glad to be back and be on.
So you late last night, kind of cataloging all those way too early top 25s. I'm a big fan of the early hot takes, even when they don't necessarily reflect my opinion. I just love the way in which college football just does this so quick. And I don't know that other sports do this as fast. I don't know that right after the Super Bowl we're doing, here are the six teams from both conferences that will make the playoffs, or, you know, NBA, Major League Baseball. But in college football, this is just sort of part of the tradition. We don't even let the confetti get swept off the field from the national championship venue before we're already looking ahead to the next upcoming season. So after kind of putting a list together of where Georgia is, I think as high as 6 in some, as low as 13 in at least one, What do you make of the kind of national consensus about Georgia as we get ready to put our attention fully on 2020?
What I found reading some of these people's thoughts, you know, Mark Schlabaugh, ESPN, Brad Crawford, 247 Sports, there's a lot of people out there who might think that the Georgia offense next year might be better, even though there's going to be significant turnover. You know, one thing I think we're probably overlooking to start right now is replacing DeAndre Swift, just given yeah. – No, I do kind of think maybe he's perhaps taken advantage of all that he's done. But, you know, I can't help but think, do you know where LSU started this year?
Like bottom half of the top 10, probably?
Number 6.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, Georgia's going to be in the dance. You know, personally, I'd probably have them at 5 behind Alabama and LSU at 3 and 4. Clemson and Ohio State are the obvious 1s and 2s to start next season. I'm not quite sure why we're giving Oregon all this love when, you know, I think most people would agree they were outplayed by Wisconsin in that bowl game. But, you know, Georgia, they've got a lot of talent coming back. They're bringing in what will probably be a top 2, maybe even top 1 recruiting class in the country this year. So, you know, again, I think the biggest thing is just people want to see what this offense looks like with Jamie Newman. And we'll get that answer really quick because they open with 2 of the 3 really tough games next year. Against Virginia on a Monday night and then Alabama in week 3.
No, I think that's exactly right. And I think it's important to remember, while it's easy to make the comparison to LSU, I think in college football, what you saw from LSU this year is the real outlier. Change that was drastic. For the most part in college football, I believe that change from year to year is more incremental. Now, sometimes that's a good thing, meaning you incrementally get better. Sometimes that can be a bad thing, meaning you incrementally get worse. But for the most part, you don't see, at least seemingly see, wild drastic changes in performance because of the addition of one player, the addition of one coach, the addition or the subtraction of a player or coach either. For the most part, change is incremental. So when I think about what Georgia might be able to do next season, becoming a little bit more of a, I guess, modern-styled offense, certainly utilizing the skill set that Newman brings to the table, I guess it's probably important to remember that having some sort of wild change for the better like LSU did, statistically, the last couple of decades of college football would tell us that the LSU performance is a huge outlier in that direction.
Yeah, and I think it helps LSU to have Joe Burrow, who, in of the players I've gotten the privilege to see live and in person, Burrow's the best I've ever seen. And you think back, so let's go back to that 2014 team, that 2014 Alabama team when Lane Kiffin came in, Saban was opening up the offense. That Alabama team still had some growing problems that year. They lost at Ole Miss, and then they lost in the playoff to Ohio State in a game where, ironically, they threw the ball a lot more when they probably should have just turned around and handed the ball off to Derrick Henry. So expecting Georgia to look like LSU next year, even if they do go out and add a new offensive coach, I believe Todd Monken is the name the online chatter is sort of speculating about right now, you know, don't expect this offense next year, I think, to really put up like 55 points a game and Jamie Newman to score 60 touchdowns.
Let me do one more on this, then I want to talk about Trey McKitty here for a moment. Here's my opinion. I certainly expect Georgia to remain a national championship contender next season, no matter what. No matter how different the offense is, there's still just too much on defense to think this program falls apart. There are still enough weapons that Georgia can play with offensively, even if there's not the dramatic tweak to the offense we want to see. This is still a contender. And yet, I must admit that I do think there's some legitimate questions about whether Georgia can take that next step beyond that. So, in other words, top 10 team knocking on the door of winning the SEC, being back in the playoff, that is obviously still a reasonable expectation for UGA fans. But in terms of doubt about Georgia actually taking the step beyond that, the national experts who are expressing some of that skepticism, I do think they have some evidence to justify their opinions, at least for the moment, which is one of the things that will make this season fun, watching Georgia try to find a way to solve those problems.
Right. So, you know, if I can make an analogy here, Georgia, right? Imagine college football as a, you know, 10-story apartment. Right now, Georgia's on the 9th floor.
Yeah.
They're, and it's probably just them and Oklahoma. They're the only two people on that floor. You know, great seasons every year.
Yeah.
Borderline. They're, you know going into that last season, if they win that weekend, they're probably going to the college football playoff. But it's clear they're not getting into the penthouse right now, which is where I think Alabama, Clemson, and Ohio State, and you can probably even put LSU in there at this point, given that it looks like Joe Brady's going to be back. And, you know, Dan Mullen, too, this was a really good point he made. Difficult going from 10 wins to 11 wins. It's even harder going from 11 wins to 12 wins, which is essentially what Georgia is trying to do every season now.
No, I think that's exactly right. I think it's a pretty good way to say that. One of the guys going to help Georgia do that is Trey McKitty, a tight end that comes in from Florida State. you know, we're going to hear from Jeff Sintel on this topic a bit later on in our program. And I just think when you can go out and get a guy that has statistically achieved, who's been on the field a lot, who has a mature body, there is, to pardon the double negative, there is nothing not to like about George adding Trey McKitty. Now, I'm not going to tell you he's going to come in here and win. Is it the John Mackey Award? Is that the high?
Yeah.
I'm not going to tell you he's going to be that kind of performer for Georgia. But in terms of making an immediate impact, of being one of Georgia's most pivotal players, if he's healthy, that's what McKitty's going to do. This is a big-time addition for the Dogs, and I'm pretty sure you agree.
He reminds me a little bit, actually, of Lawrence Cager in that, you know, he's coming from an offense that had quarterback issues, that had offensive issues last year, but he was still able to somewhat put up encouraging numbers. Now, I'm not saying McKitty is going to be what Lawrence Cager was for Georgia, but if he can simply even come in and put up the numbers that he put up at Florida State, you know, last 2 years he's combined to have 49 catches in those two seasons, around 200, 300 yards. If he can give Georgia that's a big plus that Georgia can use, because you saw, I think, in that Florida game, you know, Eli Wolf was a valuable target and
yeah.
It made a big play at the end to win that
That's
game.
Right.
So, you know, Georgia's not going to ask him to be, you know, George Kittle, Zach Ertz, and be the sort of the focal point of the offense. But if he can be a dependable tight end, something Georgia does, as much as you can like Darnell Washington, Georgia just does not have right now. If he can fill that role, that's a huge that's going to make Jamie Newman's job a lot easier.
How do you compare the rest of the tight ends for a moment? You know, Fitzpatrick's the guy that's played the most. I think there's a chance that Goody may have been the more athletic of the two when he was healthy in high school. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Darnell Washington's this unique specimen, but he hasn't played the college level yet. Georgia likes to play sometimes two tight ends together, certainly two tight ends in a rotation offensively. If we assume McKitty, because of experience, is the number one tight end, who has the inside track on being the number two tight end at the moment?
I think right now you'd have to go Fitzpatrick, given, again, as much as people might like Darnell Washington, he's not an early enrollee, so he's not going to get here in the summer. And based off what I saw at the Under Armour game, he is going to have to tweak his body a little bit, lose a little bit of weight, and just so he can move around a little bit better, I think. And, you know, the coaching staff liked Fitzpatrick a lot last offseason. He actually, I believe, started the Vanderbilt game for them there. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, can he if McKitty's going to be sort of more in that Eli Wolf role, can Fitzpatrick improve enough as a blocker, or is it going to be Goody who sort of emerges in that Charlie Warner blocker type role?
I want to talk about a couple other subjects. I don't want to spend too much time on this, but I will say that I'm big fans of both Goody and mm-hmm. Fitzpatrick, and I think they both deserve their chance. And I, you know, obviously was excited about the acquisition of Darnell Washington during the early signing period. That was a big get for Georgia. But, you know, ultimately, I think that Goody and Fitzpatrick are almost lost names on this Georgia roster, but you know, Fitzpatrick, because of his size, he's so tall. Goody, who was a really good high school player when he was healthy, I mean, I think there's a chance that Georgia may have more in these tight ends than the average fan may realize, because we've spent our time fixating on other players, but it could be Goody and Fitzpatrick's time to shine here.
Yeah, and especially if Goody, I think, maybe continues to get more healthy and feel better from that knee injury he suffered his senior year. I think there's a chance that, you know, he could possibly look more and more like the player Georgia thought they were getting when he originally committed to Georgia.
Let me ask you this about Jamie Newman. Do you think he knew what he was signing up for when he agreed to come to Georgia? Because it's amazing to me that he goes from being a player that some folks had heard of, but maybe not just generating a lot of buzz on the internet. And you can just look at the pages of DogNation.com in the last couple of days. There's like just, you know, just story after story after story, podcast topic after podcast topic. Do you think that he had been coached up and prepared for the fact that, hey, your last day as an anonymous college football player was the day before you picked coming to Georgia? What do you think that transition is going to be like from him going from, you know, the somewhat lack of attention that you get playing at Wake Forest to the massive amount of attention he gets at Georgia, even before he enrolls, even before he goes through his first practice?
So I think a big reason why Georgia ended up going out and getting him, even though a guy like Derek King, you know, people were waiting on him going into the transfer portal, which he did during the national championship game last night, Georgia very much wanted to get Newman in as soon as they possibly could and have him here for this spring. And I think him being here and getting acclimated to that and sort of, you know, dealing with all the news and hype surrounding him now is going to make him better come August and September, when, you know, you think he'd be a little bit more used to it.
Yeah.
This is a more of a media thing, and I know it might not appeal much to the fan base at large, but I'll be interested to see how much we get to talk to Newman this spring, sort of how comfortable Georgia is putting him out there and sort of letting him become the face of the program for the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting way to say that. It kind of dovetails what I talked about yesterday. You know, I hope Georgia does treat him as a little bit of a focal point for the program. I hope Georgia does treat him as a, I guess, kind of a face for this. Not because competition doesn't matter. It obviously does matter, and you have to, you know, continue to earn your job day after day. But that point of, is he allowed to speak publicly on behalf of the offense? The average fan doesn't care about SEC media days, but does Georgia take him to SEC media days and say, hey, this is our guy, and we trust him enough to speak to all of you right now? That is a little bit of a media inside story, but it is an example symbolically of the fact that Georgia's saying, we are putting our eggs in your basket for now, and it's your job to go out there and make good on the chance that we're giving you. I think given the unique situation that Georgia finds itself in this year, that's probably the appropriate step.
Yeah, I think it comes down to a trust issue. Or not a trust issue, but a trust aspect. And I think it would be – you mentioned this yesterday, wanting Kirby to name him a starter. I do think that enables trust between the two parties, because at the end of the day, Georgia this season, if they're going to get to the playoff – it's because Newman is able to make the plays at the quarterback position that can sort of get Georgia over the hump that they have not been able to these last 2 years.
I'm going to have my thoughts on the national championship game coming up in a moment, but what did you think about the game last night? And I guess bonus points if you can, you know, sort of tie it into what maybe a Georgia fan takes away from this. I thought it was an entertaining game, although by the time it was over, not a close game. What did you make of LSU Clemson from last night?
Joe Burrow, when he evades that first rusher and is sort of scrambling around back there, not looking to run, but to looking to throw the ball 40 yards downfield, is one of the more terrifying, you know, aspects of college football in recent memory. I was watching with my roommates last night, and I believe the first play of the game, it got negated by a penalty, but Burrow somehow just bends and contorts his body to avoid rushers and just flings the ball 40 yards downfield into a tight window, and it's a completion, and it ultimately got called back. But, you know, thinking of this team, I think it's clearly the best team of the past decade, and Burrow himself is on the very short list of best college football players of all time.
And I thought whether you give the credit to Brady or give the credit to Ensminger, the way that they spread Clemson's defense out so wide and really neutralize any chance that Clemson had a pass rush, because they're having to worry about – I mean, Clemson was playing the same seven defensive back look for a while that Georgia played, and then Auburn probably had the most success trying to do. But when you're playing seven defensive backs, much the same way that Georgia had no pass rush in the SEC championship game, Clemson really for a lot of last night had no pass rush either. So I think the one thing we can say is that the seven defensive back look is not a winning strategy against Clemson, or I should say against LSU, because the teams that tried it all lost.
Right, you need to be able to get pressure with three or four guys, and Auburn was really the only team all year that was able to do that against LSU. I think if you're a Clemson, or, you know, what are your bigger takeaways from last night? Last night's the importance of recruiting and recruiting, you know, in depth, because Clemson, yes, they've gotten those five-star guys, you know, a few of them, and especially positions that matter, you know, left tackle, wide receiver, quarterback. But until this 2020 signing class, they haven't necessarily had those guys in bulk.
Yeah.
And I think last night is an example why, because as that game went on, you could sort of feel that Clemson was just wearing down because they did not have the talented depth that this LSU team has had.
No, I think that's a really good point. Connor, great stuff at DogNation.com. We appreciate you keeping us up to date on everything there on the site. We appreciate you being here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia today.
Yep. Thanks, Brandon.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Yeah, I think Connor does a great job at DogNation.com, and I'm glad to be able to showcase him here and feature him here a little bit as a part of our program here today. I got some more thoughts on the national championship game. I want to get to that here coming in a moment. Let me remind you, though, as we go cruise around the SEC, it's brought to you by our friends at Royal Caribbean. And one of the things I love about a Royal Caribbean cruise is the action that goes on the ship during your trip. You know, the entertainment options, whether it be the shows, I'm talking about Tony Award-winning Broadway musicals, the dive shows, the performance drones on the Oasis class ships. They have the Aqua Theater shows, just an amazing degree of entertainment. Then when it comes like the sort of the night spot type stuff, whether it be, you know, karaoke bars or the Playmaker Sports Bar, whether it be like, you know, nightclub type with the live music, just so many different options for you on a Royal Caribbean cruise, you really got to experience this for yourself if you've never done so. So reach out to your own travel advisor and let them help you book your travel. Or if you need a recommendation, let me give you one as well. You can get in touch with the Cruise and Vacation Authority by simply calling 800-326-4971. 800-326-4971. Please let them know you heard about them, though, on Dog Nation Daily. All right, so in the aftermath of the game last night, I think it's really interesting to watch the narrative form. And there are some people who are really comfortable saying, I think you heard Connor Riley say a version of this a moment ago about Joe Burrow, this may be the most dazzling quarterback performance we've seen in a single season, and it very well might be. I think that Paul Feinbaum has said that LSU is the greatest team he's ever seen, and it might be. I'm a little more comfortable saying something different, and it's not because I want to soften the language. It's because I think there's a better conversation to be had than whether LSU's the greatest team of all time or not, or whether the Joe Burrow had the greatest season a quarterback's ever had, because ultimately that's always going to be really, really subjective. And when possible, objective conversations are just better. So here's an objective conversation I think you can have, and I think it actually serves the purpose of making the sport better. I think the way that this 2019 LSU team should be treated is, and I guess also tweeted as well, this is the most accomplished team of all time. And those accomplishments really matter. And what LSU was able to earn last night by winning is something that Clemson would not have had available to it. Clemson would have been a very deserving national champion had it won, just given the fact that it would have won for two consecutive years. But Clemson didn't beat Auburn, didn't beat Florida, didn't go on the road to beat Alabama, didn't handle Georgia in an SEC championship game. Clemson couldn't have been able to say that, but LSU can. Look at all the top 10 teams that LSU beat during the season. And by the way, this works whether you count what those teams were ranked when LSU plays them or what those teams were ranked by the end of the season. LSU just racked up resume win after resume win after resume win. The sport will be better if we celebrate that accomplishment. The sport will be better if we honor those kinds of just impressive collections of big wins and big games. Because honestly, we ought to want to incentivize more teams to do what LSU does. Playing an SEC schedule, but also going on the road to Austin to play Texas. And yes, I realize Texas ended up not being a great team, but we ought to honor teams who play tough schedules. The fact that LSU was as invincible as it was for a full season, having played the schedule that it did, that's the most significant aspect of its accomplishment last night, and it ought to be spoken of there in those regards. I'm no LSU fan, but I am very impressed with what LSU was able to do, making it look as easy as it did, given the schedule that it played. That is quite amazing. And Ed Orgeron's brand right now near the top of college football, it doesn't get much better than that as of right now. Certainly by smaller by comparison is Alabama coach Nick Saban. And I played some audio from Saban a little earlier on ESPN last night. When some people heard Saban say some of those kinds of things, and really some of the other things that Saban was saying last night, there was this thought of, oh, well, is this Saban trying to help his own recruiting efforts? Is this him trying to take a Georgia down a peg or take this program down a peg or, you know, something along those lines? Is this Saban trying to make himself and Alabama look bigger? That's not what I think was going on last night. And what I think you saw last night was Saban trying really hard to do well on television. If I was an Alabama fan, I'd be very nervous about what I saw last night. To me, it looked like Saban was thinking about his post-Tua Tagovailoa career aspirations and realizing that coaching Alabama when you don't have an all-time great quarterback, coaching Alabama when you don't have a machine at that position to make it all go, that may not be too much fun. I've told you before that Saban's in the winter of his career, I believe, that his time in Alabama is done sooner rather than later. I think you saw last night him trying to put some irons in the fire for what he might be able to do when he's no longer coaching the Crimson Tide. Kirk Herbstreit said before that he believes that Saban will do TV when this is all said and done. Saban last night, to me, came across on ESPN as a guy trying very hard to do well on television. It's easy to imagine him going to some producers after it's all said and done saying, hey, how did I do? Did that work for you guys? Were you happy with that? I think Saban last night looked like he was certainly feeling pretty comfortable in that analyst chair. If I'm an Alabama fan, that makes me probably just a bit nervous. It did become official, I guess, last night during the game. Houston quarterback Derek King, to no one's surprise, put his name in the transfer portal. because of the pipeline that Houston has to LSU and just the geographic closeness, it's easy to imagine LSU as the number one potential suitor for King. In fact, I think that's been openly speculated online. Obviously, LSU needs a new quarterback. I don't see really anyone on the roster who becomes that guy. King may be the best name available right now. So we'll see if the real-life version of events is as easy to watch unfold as they have been predicted to be online over the course of the last couple of months. But King now officially in the transfer portal, and we will see what his next destination is. Obviously, as SEC fans will be paying very close attention to all of that. And then one final thing here. I kind of railed on Herschel Walker not being the number one all-time great last night when the college football list of the greatest players of all time was announced. I guess there was another pocket of online criticism because there weren't really any players from like the last couple of decades who made the top 10, top 20 list at all. Tim Tebow low on this list, some people thought. Now, listen, any list that snubs a Florida Gator like that is already pretty good for me. But I guess there was a little bit of thought of, you know, the fact that the Matt Leinarts and the Reggie Bushes and I don't know if you include Cam Newton in this for just one season or not, but a lot of those guys just didn't maybe rank as high as some people thought, that this was a list that had a little bit more of a 60s, 70s, 80s flair than it had kind of a more modern flair. I guess you can be upset about that if you want to. I don't think there's anything wrong with honoring the history of the sport, and I do think that, you know, to go back to Herschel here for a moment, I think a player like that in the era in which he played does have outsized importance compared to a guy now. Even if you want to say like Cam Newton, for instance, for one season there at Auburn, the modern game and the way that guys are getting spread out, even if you don't have a bunch of great players around you, it's just difficult to, you know, to sort of build an entire team around one person. But back then, everybody in the stadium knew Herschel was getting the ball every single time. And I'm using Herschel as an example, but I think this is also true for, you know, guys of that kind of what we think of as now as a less modern era. So I didn't have a problem so much with the classic names populating the list near the top, but some people did, and I guess I thought I'd point that out to you. That's Cruising Around the SEC, courtesy of Varola Caribbean. Good to have you here on Dog Nation Daily here today. Let me kind of transition back to something I talked to Connor Riley about for a couple of minutes a moment ago, the fact that really the big news yesterday, and we were live on video covering this, was Georgia adding Trey McKitty, the tight end from Florida State. And I got a chance to talk to Jeff Sintel about this yesterday, and I wanted to give you guys some of the audio of what Jeff had to say about this. One number in particular that Jeff shared that I think goes a long way towards explaining why McKitty has such a value to UGA. This is pretty interesting. Here's a little bit of Jeff on what Georgia is getting in McKitty, the grad transfer from the Seminoles.
I think the first thing you got to think of is not so much, you know, where these guys were rated in high school, because Doty and Fitzpatrick both were rated higher as tight ends, and McKitty was coming out of IMG Academy. I think more of it's kind of like grown man football. You've got a guy in McKitty that came out in 2017 class. He's at least a year and a half older than even Fitzpatrick, is the previous senior member of Georgia's tight end room. And I think the big number for here for me is 23. That's how many catches McKitty had last year. And that's how many catches the entire Georgia tight ends room had last year in 2019.
So listen, that number really stands out at you, that this is a guy who's been as prolific on his own as the entire tight end group for Georgia has been. And, you know, when Georgia makes a move like this, you see a lot of skepticism show up in some of our comment sections from people who say that, well, Georgia doesn't use tight ends anyway. What's the point of even getting excited about adding a guy like McKitty? Why is he even coming here? Georgia's not going to throw the ball to him. But Kirby Smart's told us this before, and I know that sometimes some of his ways of speaking about the offense can be sort of eye-roll inducing. I completely get all of that. But when he says that you've got to be a matchup nightmare to command attention as a tight end, I think there's probably something to that. And I think that Georgia is willing to throw to tight ends when they do the work to get open. Go back and look at what Isaac Nada did in 2018 as an example of that. More than 400 yards receiving. You can't really say that Georgia didn't use him. It did use him to a pretty great effect kind of all the way around. And I believe that Georgia can use McKitty, just given the fact that he's got some experience catching the ball going back to his time at Florida State. Here's a little bit more from Jeff on what the Dogs are getting in the graduate transfer tight end.
You've got McKitty, who's going to be a more experienced, a bigger, faster, stronger type athlete, an older type athlete, and also a guy that's caught 49 balls in the past 2 years, coming out of a great program in high school and IMG Academy that got their guys ready. So to me, on the outside, I'd probably say McKitty, you don't transfer from one school to the other as a graduate transfer, unless you don't have a clear, keen eye on playing time, I would think the front runners for maybe the early reps would be a Trey McKitty. It would also be a John Fitzpatrick. And also, I would put Rylan Goede and Darnell Washington in there right now. Georgia is no stranger to putting two or three tight ends on the field a lot. But what you're going to do is when you can add a 6'5", 245-pound tight end like McKitty to an offense, it's going to get a lot more multiple with the speed out on the edges. And now with a graduate transfer quarterback, it does certainly seem like Georgia is checking off a lot of the needs in order to be a more high-powered or turbocharged offense in 2020.
Yeah, I think what Jeff's entire take on all of that is very accurate all the way around. That I think that McKitty's a big-time pickup for Georgia and a guy that you can easily envision UGA using. And the one thing that's very on-brand for Georgia, I think, when it has a need, when it's got an issue, Kirby Smart's just proven to be really aggressive at going after solutions for this. He's the kind of guy that sort of solves a pest control problem with a sledgehammer from time to time, and you like that, right? I think that the aggressive way in which he goes out and try to handle these you know various issues is a nice thing to see. Georgia needed a quarterback. Smart worked quickly to get one. Georgia needs a little bit more of a veteran presence in its tight end room. Georgia goes out and becomes very aggressive in trying to get that. It's on brand for Kirby, and I think more times than not that works out pretty well. Plus, when you just look at the history of transfers to Georgia in the Smart era, a lot of these have paid off in a really big, big way. So keep that in mind. By the way, Gator Hater Updater, 1,172 days. That's how long it's been since Florida's beat Georgia. We'll see you tomorrow, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia.